This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Stop following me.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gal. The telemarketing call during dinner is bad enough. Now you've got marketers hounding you online. They track your movements from website to website and then hit you with a tailor-made pitch. But today, AOL announces a new Do Not Track service. It's similar to the Do Not Call list. So if you sign up, advertisers won't be able to hit you with those pitches. Still, AOL will try to convince people to share some information so they can receive ads they might like. A euro cost $1.44 this morning. The British pound goes for $2.07. Traders are selling dollars because they expect the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates today. Let's get a European perspective on this from our man in London, Stephen Beard. First of all, Stephen, what's the relationship between interest rates and the currencies?
As interest rates come down, of course, a currency becomes less attractive to international investors. They earn less money holding that currency, and therefore they tend to pull out and put it into another currency. That is boosting, in particular, the British pound, because while U.S. interest rates are 4.75% and falling in the U.K., they are 5.75% and very likely to stay at that level into the new year.
Are people in Britain happy with the situation, with a strong pound and a weak dollar?
Anybody planning a visit to the U.S. is certainly happy. It's good for British companies importing products from the U.S. and buying raw materials on the world market, generally denominated in U.S. dollars and therefore become cheaper for purchasers with British pounds. But, of course, it is bad for British exporters.
Stephen, how long do you think this is going to go on, the weakening dollar and the strong pound? Are we talking 3-1, 4-1, 5-1?
Well, how weak the dollar could get is anyone's guess, but there are some analysts here saying that the British economy is beset by many of the same problems as the U.S. economy, such as a big trade deficit, inflated house prices, and they reckon it won't be long before these begin to take their toll on the British pound, and it could indeed fall back below $2 early next year.
Good, because I'd love to come visit, but I can't afford it, Stephen.
Well, maybe next year.
All right. Stephen Beard, our correspondent in London, thanks.
Okay, Scott.
The stock markets are on FedWatch. Asian shares were little changed by the close. European stocks are pretty flat so far, too. The Dow begins at 13,792. It lost 78 points yesterday. The NASDAQ dropped less than a point to 2817. The S&P 500 fell 10 points to 1531. This morning, Congress takes up a new bill that would improve mine safety. It's strange. Congress just passed a mine safety bill a year ago after the tragedy in West Virginia. But of course, we've had another tragedy since then. Here's Steve Tripoli.
22 legislators rushed to co-sponsor this bill. It gained new urgency after August Crandall Canyon tragedy in Utah. The bill speeds up introduction of safety measures like improved underground communications. But University of Pennsylvania mining expert Walter Licht says Congress is still lagging in some ways.
I think they should emulate what other nations have done, where through national legislation it is mandated that safety chambers are placed on all the underground gangways of the mines.
This bill would have mine operators start installing safety chambers, but not until June of next year at the earliest. Licht says other countries have had the chambers for years and that U.S. mine operators have been resisting for a single reason.
It's cost. Cost.
But he says every new mining tragedy erodes the cost argument.
Slowly but surely, corporations get convinced that actually there are cost savings.
Particularly when every tragedy triggers a wave of costly lawsuits. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Singapore Airlines has outfitted its new Airbus A380 with sleeping cabins and double beds. This is that gigantic plane that can seat 500 people. Well, Singapore is telling people not to get the wrong idea in those cabins. It has banned romantic relations. If couples decide they want to join the Mile High Club, the airline says it will ask them to desist. You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, October 31st on Marketplace.org. Do a company's decisions on dealing with climate change have an effect on the bottom line? You'd think so. Now, should shareholders be warned about that? Well, it depends on who you ask. Congress takes a look at this issue today. Jeremy Hobson has more from Washington.
On one side is Mindy Luber, the president of Ceres, a coalition of investors and environmentalists. She'll testify to Congress today that the Securities and Exchange Commission isn't doing its job.
Right now, the law says that the SEC should require publicly traded companies to disclose any material risk. For dozens of industries, climate change creates that risk.
For instance, she says, the impact of mega hurricanes on insurance companies or the impact of carbon caps on power companies planning to build coal plants. But Rajiv Dhawan, an economic forecaster at Georgia State University, says the risk can't be easily quantified.
Climate change is governed by so many different things, so it should not be the responsibility of the company. The investors have to do their due diligence.
Whatever Congress does, Mindy Luber is hedging her bets. She'll meet with the SEC about the issue in December. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Westerners once poured into China, eager for adventure and business opportunities. But they're being replaced by a new breed of transplant, corporate managers and their families who don't really want to be in China. Bill Marcus reports from Shanghai on this crowd of unwilling expats.
China often reminds you you're not in charge. Make a mistake when you dial an international call and you get this response.
You're not authorized to dial this number.
The Chinese have had thousands of years to feel powerless. Jocelyn Lamila's had 7 months. That's how long it's been since her husband transferred to Shanghai. A few weeks ago, Lamila had some furniture delivered.
I saw them opening the back of the van to get the furniture out, so I opened the door and I waited for them. And one of the men went around the side of the van in my front yard and peed in the front yard.
For Jocelyn, who's from Ohio, China is an unwelcome adventure. It's hard to get around. The people are crude, and she can't speak the language. It's nothing like her family's last posting in Zurich. But she and her husband Yari, a controller for a multinational company, knew that when they were asked to move to China, they really had no choice.
You sort of have to have a China in your CV to get somewhere in a company.
ChinaSolve.com publisher Andrew Hubert says there are hundreds of families like the Lamilas.
The dominant model in China right now is the expat who doesn't really want to be here or doesn't really care about being in China per se. He would rather stay home.
Big companies are doing what they have long done to help these people adjust, including recreating Main Street.
They've got American stores, American restaurants, American-style housing, American-style hospitals and medical facilities, American-style schools. And they have spent a lot of money. Someone has spent a lot of money replicating the American lifestyle.
But soon there may be fewer Americans to appreciate it. Global companies are finding they get the same talent for less money by hiring locally. And, given a fatter paycheck, the Chinese will suffer powerlessness gladly. In Shanghai, I'm Bill Marcus for Marketplace.
For kids, too much Halloween candy equals stomach ache and, of course, cavities. Dentists are always warning kids about this, but, you know, it goes in one ear and out the other. But money, now money talks, even to children. Here's Renita Jablonski.
Dr. Chris Kammer was sick of sending out the same old press release about the not-so-sweet effect of candy on teeth. He wanted to find another way to drill home that message.
Halloween, you know, the holiday that all dentists should dread, will now be the holiday that dentists will take back.
Kammer decided to buy back the Halloween candy of kids in his Wisconsin neighborhood. For every pound, he handed over a dollar. He gave away more than $250 in 06 and sent the candy to U.S. troops in Iraq. Around 200 dental offices will give it a shot this year. Jody Sullivan is helping with the program in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Her office ordered hundreds of lightsaber toothbrushes as an extra bonus.
I know all kids might not want to give up their candy, so there has to be a little bit of incentive, I guess.
Kammer says along with toothbrushes, he'll have plenty of singles ready for tomorrow's buyback.
I want to have $1,000 in cash.
Hope the tooth fairy's listening. I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
I was thinking of dressing up this Halloween as an arm and a leg, because that's how much Halloween costumes seem to cost these days. Commentator David Frum has been scouring for an economic explanation.
In an old family photo album, there is a picture of my sister and myself on our way to our first Halloween. She's carrying a fairy wand, a drumstick wrapped in tinfoil. I've pulled on a football helmet and rain boots to be a spaceman. We're both holding paper loot bags. Total cash expenditure? Not quite zero, since my sister used actually quite a lot of tinfoil, but close to it. Flash forward. Halloween today ranks as the fourth most lavish national holiday event, behind Christmas, the Super Bowl, and New Year's Eve. Almost half of American adults expect to spend money to decorate their homes in some way. A half century ago, the liberal economist John Kenneth Galbraith argued that consumer behavior is largely fomented by manipulative advertising. Big corporations instill in consumers desires that they would never otherwise feel. You can see the appeal of this theory. It avoids the embarrassing possibility that Americans have decided for themselves to turn their homes into backdrops for horror movies. But it's not big candy or the ghoul industry that drives the Halloween holiday. Some social critics think we are seeing the emergence of a new kind of half-grown-up, an infantilized society of kidults who read Harry Potter. That may be so. But I think there's a simpler explanation for the Halloween boom. The fastest growth in Halloween spending is occurring among college-age Americans. Halloween has evolved into a one-day spring break, conveniently placed almost exactly midway between the start of term and Christmas exams. The humor magazine, The Onion, published a joke list of the top holiday costumes for college-age women. Sexy French maid, sexy cat, sexy witch, sexy hobo, sexy ketchup bottle, and so on. And despite John Kenneth Galbraith, you don't need advertising to sell that.
David Frum is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. If you'd like to argue about his Halloween theories, join us online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and happy Halloween.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.